All right, so the Jays are on the West Coast. They've got 3 in Oakland and 4 in Seattle. And no days off, man. They're playing every single day. And, again, I was at the game on Saturday when Gausman went down. He got out of a jam in the first. And then he goes down and you realize this Lawrence character is coming in here and he's going to have to give him like 5 innings.
Yeah.
Because it's a doubleheader. Hatch is going at night. He got destroyed. But they don't have the arms right now with Ryu out. With obviously, you know, other concerns in the bullpen. We mentioned Nate Pearson was a guy that maybe you'd hope would be a part of the program. It's not going to happen. And at this point, you got Manoa, who is a 10 out of 10 in terms of confidence. And beyond that, it's a little bit concerning, even with the rotation and certainly with the bullpen. And yet, they're in a wild card spot. They're still in a good place. Game 81 tonight. We're halfway home. Here's our TSN MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. What's happening, Steve?
Hey, guys, good to be with you.
Yeah.
Happy 4th of July.
Yes.
We had a great weekend, and I know it's you're not celebrating it the way we are here, but glad to be on to talk some baseball.
Yeah, likewise, buddy. Happy 4th of July. It's great to have you. We appreciate you doing it on a day like today. And the Jays, you know, that series started so well. Their bats were alive. The arms were alive. Thursday, Friday, then Saturday, the doubleheader, they got torched, and yesterday it got away from them as well. And the focus in the city clearly is not just the rotation, but the staff in general, the arms in general. They're in a wild card spot. I think they'll remain there. But how many arms away do you believe this team is from actually being World Series competitive?
Well, I think that first, you know, Gausman's health coming back from the ankle is going to be important. But, you know, I was really happy to see that, I mean, think how catastrophic it could have been if Kikuchi and Barrios weren't really good.
Right.
Remember, that's Thursday, Friday. And if those two guys aren't, you know, much better than they've been, then you've got a real issue on your hands. And so, you know, because they were so good, I think it at least protected numbers of pitchers and innings and everything else in the doubleheader. But, look, I think they're going to probably need another starter. And I think one or two more relievers. And that's going to be very doable in the trade market. It will be. It's relievers are a dime a dozen to get at the trade deadline. You can find guys who are pitching well on other teams who are available. I remember counting a year, there were like 32 right-handed relievers who got traded. And, you know, I think they could use a left-hander in the mix there too. And so I think they're going to probably need a couple relievers and a starter. But I think that they can go out and do it. And look, even if they don't get a starter, I think they're a playoff team. You know, I think what it does, though, is it compromises the bullpen a little bit more because of the workload. If you don't get another starter, that you're going to have, you know, relievers coming in earlier in the game. And so ideally, getting another quality starter also makes the bullpen better. And then you fortify the bullpen with a couple more arms. So I think that, and I think Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro are certainly in a position to be able to do that. They've got a farm system to be able to do that. They could use a pleasant surprise for a Hatch or somebody to step up and maybe take advantage of an opportunity and show what they can do. But I'm, you know, I think that with where they are, they're not going to go into the playoffs necessarily as the best team, you know, with how they're going to, you know, just because where the Mets have been playing or where the Dodgers have been playing or where the Yankees have been playing. But I think they've got a chance to have enough of a roster to win 11 postseason games, or what is it going to be now, like 13 postseason games. To be able to get to a World Series and win it. And so I do think that potential exists for this team.
Steve, it's Gord Miller. I don't do this show a lot. I fill in a lot in the summer and talk to you then, and I feel like a broken record. But is it fair to ask if the bullpen is being unfairly singled out here?
Yeah, I think that you know, I mean, it is. Because, you know, they're being asked to eat innings that a bullpen, I guess the best way to explain it is Jim Leland, who I respect a lot as a major league manager, I think he's a Hall of Fame manager, he would say all the time, the best way to have a good bullpen is to keep them in the bullpen, that you use them when you want to, not when you need to. And so the Jays have been in positions, obviously with Gausman getting knocked out early, with Kikuchi and Barrios with these early, you know, outings and getting knocked out of games. Charlie Montoya's been in a position where he's had to go to the bullpen because he had no other choice. He had to go out there and do it. And because of the innings workload that they've had. I mean, the other thing is, because they played so many close one-run games, their premium relievers were getting overworked as well. I think at one point they had 3 relievers on pace for 70-plus games, which is going to be a real wear down on them. You know, Romano, for a closer, was pitching in almost every game. He was pitching over half the games at one point because of the fact that they played so many close games. So They won a lot of them, which was good. But they do, you know, that bullpen's had a workload, and it's not because the bullpen isn't effective. It's because the rotation has not eaten up some of those innings. So, I think the answer is the bullpen can be solved with better starting pitching. They may need an arm or two, but I think if they get starting pitching that can go deep and at least give them predictable innings, then everybody pitches in the role that they can, they're capable of, they don't get overworked, and they start to pitch better.
Steve, when I look at the Blue Jays and their window to win, it feels like it's relatively now. Like, how much of their futures, if you're Ross Atkins, do you think you'd want to part with to get some help for the right now?
Oh, I think if it were me, I'm an all-in position. Mm-hmm. You don't know from year to year how many times you're going to get an opportunity to be a playoff team. I mean, you can have the roster to start the season, but how many times do things go wrong? Injuries happen, underperformance happens. You know, there's some major injuries where guys miss some period of time, and so I've always looked at it as if this is a year that I have a chance to be a playoff team, I'm going for it, and I generally manage that way. I made the deals to get the guys that I thought could help me win a playoff game and help me win a World Series. That guy that over the last 2 months can score an extra run or take away an extra run, that better defender, that better base stealer. And I think the Jays are there. I think they have to. You know, the clock and the window, you don't ever really know how long it's going to last and where guys are going to go with their career. And so when you've got that shot, absolutely have to take it. And I suspect that, you know, look, I remember when Alex Anthopoulos was here. And, you know, Mark Shapiro was coming in, and there was some thought that he did not appreciate the way Alex went for it in the year that he did, 15 and 16. And so because he gave up a lot of the farm system, that being said, they built it back quickly. And I think that when this team and this management group finds themselves in a position, they may not go all in with everybody, but I think they're going to be willing to give up some real talent to make this roster more well-rounded in a playoff team.
Well, especially if it comes with term, right, Steve? I mean, that would be what I would have to believe they're looking for is this window. They think they're in it for a few years, as they should be, with considering the money they gave to Barrios, Gosman. They have Vladdy and Bo, et cetera, under control. Springer, multiple years left on his deal. Like, if you can bring in impact arms, and I think it's more bullpen, you're willing to pay more if you've got a guy under control for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and even a starter. I think even more so the starter. You know, relievers, you know, getting a reliever that has 2 or 3 more years of control, relievers are so hard. It's where general managers make their most mistakes. That from 1 year to the next, is the guy going to pitch well? What was his workload? How many times did he warm up and sit down? And it's really hard to quantify that impact from 1 year to the next. So, to me, it would be the starting pitcher that had some controllability. A guy for the rest of this year and next year, I'm going to pay more for him, and I'll absolutely do it with this roster. The relievers, you could always find a guy that's hot, that's a free agent, ride him the rest of this year. If you get another year, fine. But, I mean, those guys, I don't mind getting the rental reliever because you could always go out next year and sign another reliever to take place of that guy. But finding that starter that could really be an answer for you is really where I think the target should be.
Steve, other baseball news today. Apparently Juan Soto was turned down an extension offer of $350 million plus from the Washington Nationals. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand it.
Put that
I really
into perspective
don't.
For us.
He's hitting 220. I mean, he's not having a real good year. And, you know, I honestly think that the contract's probably weighing on him a little bit, and that because he turned down the big contract earlier already from them, that I think it's affected him, that he feels like he better go out and play, because if they're going to earn what Scott Boras wants is a half-billion-dollar contract, he's going to have to go out and perform even more. And so I don't know. I could never recommend to a client to reject $350 million. I don't know that I could ever do it. So maybe I wouldn't be a good agent, because, you know, the number of catastrophic things can happen, or just a guy starting to underperform even a little bit, and the millions of dollars you're going to leave on the table with that, I think is worth the risk of taking the deal right now. But that's me. And so he's betting on himself. He's a great player. I personally, and others don't agree with me, but I personally think if he underperforms all season this year and then starts to be a little less than what he was in the past, I think he's leaving millions of dollars on the table. So I don't know. I would take the deal if I were him. But here's the thing. I have a ton of respect for his willingness to bet on himself. I will not ask him for financial advice.
Well, in terms of the agent-player relationship, what do you make of this Freddie Freeman story and his bitterness about being in L.A. as opposed to being in Atlanta, firing his agent, reports that the agent was withholding information? How much of this do you believe is true, and where is your fascination level with this story?
Yeah, it is fascinating. One, because Freddie Freeman is one of the classiest players. Casey Close is one of the classiest agents out there. And, you know, you're dealing with the Braves and Dodgers, classy organizations. So, I mean, it's a really hard one to try to understand. There was obviously a real miscommunication between the Braves and the agent and Freddie Freeman and the agent, because Freddie sounds like he didn't want to leave. And, he wanted to make whatever deal was the best deal to be made, and that somewhere along the way in the negotiation, the agent thought he was still negotiating for the best deal from anybody, or he portrayed that to Atlanta to say, you know, look, we've got the Dodgers who are willing to do more than this. And so, you know, and sort of use them as the stalking horse, to the point where the Braves heard it and said, we're going to lose them. We're not going to get them anyways. So let me go make the Matt Olson deal right now before they make their deal, because it'll take less, it'll be less pressure on me to desperately have to get a first baseman. And there had to be a real miscommunication in there. I can't believe, and I know that the agency has disclaimed the notion that they withheld any information as part of it, and I would be surprised if they did. Now, you know, there's a thought that agents sometimes would rather the player sign with the most money rather than the most comfortable location for a little less money, because the agent's commission is based upon, you know, the gross amount of it, 5% of the gross deal, and they're going to get their share of it. So, but I've never experienced Casey Close that way or his agency. And so it seems to me there was a major miscommunication along the way. And those can lead to, you know, breaking up players and agents. But I don't think that there was any, you know, malice in any of it. I don't think.
Yeah, something tells me there'll be some more reporting on that story. I think it will likely continue. Anyway, we'll leave it there, buddy. We appreciate you doing this. Happy holidays, and we'll do it again later in the week.
Terrific. Thanks so much for having me.
Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst.